Welcome to Raising Your Spirits. Our hope is to help you make positive changes by providing guided messages from Spirit. Tuning forks, crystals, and distance healing are how we pass those messages from Spirit to you. Sit back, relax, and enjoy your vibrational growth with us. Your host for this version of Raising Your Spirits, Tony Ginnis.
Well, new topic today, perseverance. I had a number of different ones that were going to come up, and it wasn't until last night that a group of people or a number of people are going through some stuff, and Spirit was thinking, okay, I think perseverance is a good one to sort of bring up. So it's timing is everything here, there they were saying. So today's color, of course, is orange. It's all about creation. It's all about breaking through different barriers, feeling that, you know, we're on the wrong path. Have you ever found that when you were persevering through something? You go and there's really no direction in your head. You think you're on the wrong path and you're wasting your time, you know, that kind of thing. You might even feel like you're being taken for granted if you're on a certain project and is really going nowhere. And it's overcoming obstacles and doubt. And that's what we want to sort of focus on. It's a great topic to talk about because our year is ahead of us, and it seems like our hope, our dreams, our aspirations, our wanting to have a great year is very strong. Of course, it changes as the year progresses, but in the beginning, it's very strong, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, why it's strong in the beginning, for obvious reasons, of course. We have all these plans, and it seems so exciting. But it's the perseverance that has to kick in. So this will give you enough time to process what we talk about today in class and to find out how it can be applied to your business or how it can be applied to your personal life, how you're persevering through something. And is it one thing or is it another? Okay, we're going to give you some examples about that. The overall question is, when we talk about this particular subject, is what makes us to keep going? Why do we keep going? What's the purpose? You know, to take another step, to go a little further, and to maybe try one more time at something. Because I saw a quote recently, which I thought was pretty funny, and it says, "A winner is a loser that tried one more time." You know, it's almost to the point, and I see so many examples. I read a number of years ago about a gold miner, and this is an old one. I think I read this over 20 years ago. It was this gold miner, and it's just this old guy that went to a certain plot of land where there was a gold part there, and he purchased a certain segment that he could find gold in. And he had this great aspirations. Oh man, if I struck it rich, what am I going to spend my money on? You know, I could light my cigars with $100 bills, he says, and all the fun he could have and in winning this windfall, when he could turn the gold into money. And so that was his aspirations. And one year, then the next year happened, and then it just came to the point where he was on this plot of land for 20 years for all things. And he says, okay, I can't do this any longer. I've done as far as I could do. And even all of the hopes and the things that if something did happen, you know, and it was not enough. He just lost hope and basically said, okay, I give up. I'm just going to sell this. Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted it. The first thing they asked him is, how long have you been there? 20 years. Well, okay, obviously it's not working, so I'm not interested whatsoever. And so it got to the point where he brought the price down. I forget what he bought the plot of land for, but it was less than half or almost a quarter of what he originally paid for it after 20 years. And so some young person said, oh yeah, sure, I'll try it. So he figured I'll do it for maybe 6 months or a year. And then the speculator said, yeah, okay, whatever. As long as I can sell my plot, get some money out of it. So the young man started working the land and going to the streams and doing all the things the old man showed him how to do and left all his tools there, of course, because, you know, you're not going to take those. It's just a memory of the loss. So he gave him all the tools, and within 3 days, The young guy struck one of the largest gold stems, as they call it, a gold stem, and it was worth millions instantly. He was an instant millionaire. When he struck it rich, he said, 3 days, Mike, this is awesome. So when the old man found out about it, he said, I don't believe it. I was there for 20 years. And if you look at it, he's been there for 20 years. That's the one to buy. If you're at a casino, you don't go the one that nobody goes to. You go the ones that are heavily done and there's lots of losers. And then you just wait it out. And as soon as that person leaves, then you go. Because that's the numbers, right? It's all about numbers. And so he's been there long enough. He would have stayed another few more days. The old man would have won. So the perseverance wasn't there to keep going and to be dedicated to that track. So along the way, you got to also realize when you are persevering through something, and let's say you are connecting to something you really love to do, you know, whether it's singing or whether it's in the arts of something and whatever it is, you know, there will be people around you that won't agree. There will be people around you that'll criticize of the choices that you're making. They're going to judge what you're doing. You know, is it enough? I mean, you know, and they're going to just, in their mind, trying to help you, give you advice or whatever they would think they're giving you. But it's all about the choices that you did at the time that made you do that. And then they'll stand back and they'll look at you at like after a while. Let's say you've been at it for 6 months and a year and it's still not coming to fruition, whatever your goals are. But you still persevere because you still feel there's something here. There's something there. And then they would say, you know, what are you thinking? And that's the point the Spirit wants to highlight. It's not about the thinking. It's about, I felt this was the way to go. Because it's all about faith. Because this is what I was told to do. And what voice would say that? Because when you're in this happy state and a voice tells you, this is the place to go. And it feels like this is the one. It's not like telling you. It's a suggestion. And yeah, it feels right. This feels right. I remember in my early years in the moving business, I would get these visions because my desire to be able to build a large moving company was very strong at the time. I was a very assertive person. Some would call it aggressive, but I was very assertive and I just didn't take no for an answer. I would be one of those that you'd throw at the door and I'd come through the window to try and close the deal. I was kind of like that in my early years. So I didn't take no for an answer. It was always a maybe, and I'm not quite a convinced sort of idea. So when I started in the moving business, there was various things that were happening and I saw more and more need for storage. People that had their furniture and they wanted to store them for a week, a month, that kind of thing. And I had no storage. So I borrowed some storage in one place. I bought a small place, about 800 square feet. It doesn't sound like much, but it was way more than I had. I had nothing. I had my basement, my garage, you know, but now I have 800 square feet of openness. And the guy that I rented it from segregated it. So it was a larger place, but I was only renting one spot. So I said, okay, I'll take this. This should do me for now. So I started bringing in the furniture and started using it for storage. Within 1 month, I outgrew that and I had to double it. So then I opened it up and talked to the guy. Okay, I need more space. So I was up to 1,600 square feet. I doubled it. And another month later, I was filled of that. And I kept doubling every month for 6 months. I kept doubling. I was up to about almost 3,000 square feet and still bursting at the seams. And I says, walking through furniture and stuff. I says, okay, there's a market here. So I told my wife that we need to spend some money to get containers. These are the shipping containers that you see on boats, but 20 footers like that, and to put it in our yard so it's close by. I was renting this spot, and I figured with the whatever it was in rent, $600 a month in rent I was paying or more than that, I figured that if I bought a container, within 4 to 5 months, it would pay for itself, and then it would be free. So it just made a lot of sense in terms of business. So I bought a container, and When my neighbors saw the container, I was in the woods anyway, but the neighbors were pretty far, but they would drive by, they'd see this container And there was only one in the beginning. And they'd say, what are you doing? He says, nobody's going to want a store in there. I says, well, I do have some people that wanted to store their furniture and so on. So, and even my wife said, I know we're not hardly making any money, Tony. Like, we're actually losing money every month and you're spending more on these containers. And it was just something inside of me that said, no, this is the right way. I know what's happening. I know it costs more. I know that whatever money is coming in, I'm spending double to keep going. I get it. But it was just something inside of me that says, keep going. I'm on the right track. After about 3 months, one container was paid for. Then I used a little bit of that money to buy a second container. I ended up with five once we got through it. Once we had those five, I was able to close down the other part of the storage and put everything in my own storage. And it didn't take long before I was at a break-even point. And now I'm making money every month with the rent I was charging clients, right? And my wife said, gee, how did you know that? I says, I didn't. I had no idea. But I was getting to keep going. That's the point. You have to stop thinking, because everything logistically will tell you that, what are you doing? It's just like making no sense. So it's all about faith and trying. And even then, that was way before I got into the business of doing readings or feeling anything. It was just on a business perspective, I was getting this. But even then, I had that ability to turn what I was getting into something else. Because there is darkness and you must find some sort of light. In some people, they look for the light in all the shiny things. You know, the jobs that pay the most. You know, the cars that look good, and their rationale is, well, if I'm an insurance agent or if I'm whatever profession you are, and they usually say, if you are rolling up into a client's driveway and you have a Cadillac, or if you have a high-end car, they're going to see you as successful. And everybody wants to deal with successful people, right? Wrong. That is not the case. In the beginning, I thought that, and then I realized, some people were looking at it, oh, he's coming in with a Cadillac. Boy, he must have swindled a lot of people. I says, wow, the first time I heard that, I says, wow, that's the first time I've ever sort of phrased that way. But this was from other people. Of course, there are car salesmen that were telling you this. They want to sell the car. Of course, they'll say whatever they have to sell the product. But it's always the shiny things that some people are always searching for. The bigger boat, the bigger house, the better clothes for their kids, so when they send them off to school, you know, they have that image, the neighbors, and all of that is all like shiny stuff. Then there's the real light. That's the light that you were born with. That's the God-given light that's inside of you. And if you follow that, that's going to get you to more places than you can possibly imagine. So the question is, what are you chasing? What is really going on? Is it the shiny things? That and all the people that you're not following, you're not following up on, what's happening with them? Because even when you get to the end and you are successful, you've got your money, you've got your house, you got your nice car and all the things you've ever wanted, what people usually say when they get there, and that was their only goal, by that point, their kids don't know them. They're usually divorced on their second relationship, and that's not doing the greatest either, the second time or the third, and they're not happy. I have a few clients like that, that are very well-to-do, no problem with the funds, but they're not happy. They're creating their own drama, they're creating their own, I'm not saying they're creating it on purpose, it's just that when you follow artificial light for so long, you don't feel there's another choice, you don't feel there's something else. And then when you find it, you have to backtrack all those years, all the regrets, all the doubts, all of the things that you didn't follow when you were following something else. You have to back, it's all about a bank account. Like it's like an energetic bank account. Anytime you miss something important, then that comes up. It is about perseverance. Is that what it is? Is it perseverance? Or is it all about tolerance? Are you tolerating your life? Is that what's happening? Because some people say, I'm working. I don't like my job, but I'm working. I'm persisting. Spirit says, that's not persisting. That's tolerating. You're tolerating your job. It's the same thing happening to your spouse or your partner. Are you tolerating them? It's not that you don't like them. It's just that it's not the same as it was when you first met. Okay? When you're tolerating, that's not persisting. That's tolerating. And it's a different journey. It's a different energy. And it's going to end differently. It's got to. Anything that you're tolerating, you're not going through with it with the highest amount of energy and love. You're creating something, all of it, through low energy. What do you think happens when you get to the end? Well, a lawnmower is going to come by and just cut it all down. You got to be up in the trees. The lawnmower can't get to. Okay? You could lawnmower around the tree, no problem. But you're high enough where you could see a different vantage point and you could see what's important. And you're not in the seaweeds where you can only see what is directly in front of you. So why do people quit? That's a big question. A lot of people ask that. I don't understand why this guy doesn't quit or why this person doesn't quit. Everything in their life is going like sideways, but they keep going. Why? How do they do that? Because they're not connected to things. They're not connected to things. They're connected to something else. And, you know, when you look at millionaires or even billionaires, some of them I've seen their interviews, and in somewhere in there, the question is asked, what made you keep going? What made you go to the point where you have all these obstacles? Well, when I got to the end of everything I wanted to do, I realized it wasn't about the wealth. It wasn't about the house. It wasn't about the big bank account. It wasn't about all the things that I attained in it. It was all about I had fun. And I really loved the journey. And in doing that, so many people deceive these people. So many people. I mean, if you're in business for any length of time, 2 years, 3 years and more, of course, and even in the beginning, you'll get people that won't pay. You'll get people that'll just not trust you or tell you one thing. You sign the deal, and then they do something completely the opposite. And they'll look for ways to scam you. And even after all that, you find a way to find love in it. You find a way to get through it and you let it go and you keep going. It's the perseverance. The person that knows that I'm not looking for things has a different perspective of when they lose something. Don't you? If you pride yourself, and I know people that pride themselves on their home is their life. They dust all the corners. They change their floors every 2 years. They do their carpeting. They want their home to be the essence of who they are. Redecorating all the time. Nothing wrong with any of those. It's fine. But it is their internal essence of their home. And that's the issue. It should not be. Because the moment some child comes in, wants to play, oh, no, you can't play here. You're going to make a mark on the sofa. You should go downstairs, you know, in the dungeon where I have all the cement and stuff. Go down there. And who wants to go down there? It's dark and it's cold, damp, you know. And so when we look at those things, it's not about the things. It's about where we were ready to just have fun. I knew a person in my neighborhood, a multi-million-dollar gentleman, very nice guy. And somebody wanted to buy his business. It was a trucking business. And they wanted to buy his business at one point. And they offered him $100 million to buy his business. And the man's like 80 years old. And he says, well, you know what? If I did that, I wouldn't have anything to play with. Do you think he's doing it for money? He just turned down $100 million. Now, whether it's worth that or not, it doesn't matter. The point is, at 80, he realizes, what am I going to do with myself? Go to a home? It won't be that long before all that fortune is going to go to my grandkids because I passed away. I want to have fun. I want to do stuff, parties, you know, give the staff bonuses. That makes me happy. Like a really, really nice person. You'd never know that he is a multi-millionaire from the Toyota Corolla that he's driving that's 5 years old. You'd never know it. You go to his house. It's a three-bedroom, modest home. You'd think that he works for Tim Hortons. But he carries himself differently, and everything's very easy. When you have that kind of money, that obviously the finances aren't the issue, but everybody wants what you have. So he's learned to be able to stabilize that. But just going back to the criticism, when you are criticized by other people, beware and don't be surprised when even good friends or family members start to poke at the choices that you've made, start to poke at the things that you are doing that doesn't really, you know, mesh with them. You, do you have people like that? Well, just know that I saw this one quote that I thought was awesome. The people along the way that ridicule you and that shun you and that they try to demoralize you in some way, people that criticize you are not the ones that do more than you. The people that criticize you are the ones that do less. That opens up another question. What do you mean if they do less? Because those people hate progress. I know. You can argue with that all day, but really when it comes down to, they don't like to see progress in other people. Some people hate when you post something that you just bought, a new puppy, a new car, and look at the renovation of my deck in the backyard. On the outside, hey, way to go. Hey, we can come over and have a barbecue. But inside they're saying, oh, damn, I got to get a deck. And I got to make it bigger, better. It's got to have a trebuchet and a floating sauna or something. It's got to have something bigger because their identity is in things. They want to compete with things. You bought that based on love because it's something that you really wanted. They get angry. Their low energy is their excuses of the shortfall that is a constant reminder that they are not doing the things that you are doing. And it eating them up. So what is their natural essence to this? Is to try and bring you down in some way, whether in your face or privately. I've seen actually somebody, believe it or not, I've seen somebody that has lost an incredible amount of weight because they've gone from a meat eating thing and you just eat anything you want to she says, okay, you know what? I'm going to just watch what I eat. And I know I could go vegetarian, but you know what? I think I can go vegan. I'm going to go vegan. I'm going to look it up and I'm going to read all the books. So she started buying the books. She started going through everything to eat vegan. And everywhere she went, she had to bring her own food because she knows everyone else is having steak or hamburger or hot dogs. And I can't eat the bread. I can't eat the butter, right? Because there's a certain discipline to that type of eating and vegan. So she did that for about 8 months. She shed over 42 pounds and her sisters, other people around her, they're not impressed. They said to her face that when I look at you, I get angry because it's something that I should be doing. Why are you mad at me because you're shortfall? It's an interesting dilemma, isn't it? Giving you anger because they are not doing what... So it's a reminder. So some people look at it that way. They don't say, you know what? That's a great inspiration. I would love to do what this person is doing. They don't look at it that way. They just see it from the surface because everything is surface. They're not going in deep in anything, let alone going deep in their soul. They're not going deep in anything. Everything's on the surface. And so if the surface looks great, better than someone else, they don't like it. And they don't. But they won't tell you that. This one said it to their face because it's a sister, but like other people may not tell you to your face, but it's okay because you're showing that you were ready and not everybody is. Simple as that. It's not that you have to follow me. This is what I was doing. It took me a while to get through that. I had to go through a certain process. I went through it and this was the answer for me. So when you are connected to things, it is not enough. The fact that you just want to keep going, it's just not enough. So what makes a person persevere in this way? It's about the passion, about looking at all the important things in life. Now we talked about, you know, missing family reunions because you're always so focused on your work. You work all the time. Let's work. So family reunions, I can't go. I'm too busy. Baby's first step. Oh, I missed it. Did you get a video? Right? The first foods that they eat that's solid instead of the pablum or whatever other liquids they were drinking. first date, first time they rode a bike, first time they graduated, you know, like, and even small things, Christmas concerts. I'm too busy because they're following something else. And that's not perseverance, like as they've already said. So you're tolerating your journey in that way. And one thing I wanted to mention about kids, you know, kids are a great teacher because they won't do anything unless it has an element of fun. Have you noticed that? Okay, let's do this, let's do that. Oh, no, that's boring. Let's not do that. If it has jumping and singing and playing, there's games, and there's has something to do with mud, has something to do with everyone's getting wet, they're all in for that. But Spirit says, you know, they're still persevering. They're still persevering, but it doesn't look and feel like it is because they're using a higher energy of joy in doing all those things. And what are they learning when they're singing with other friends? What are they learning when they're jumping and making up games? They're learning to create in their own way. They're learning to sing in front of other people and not feel embarrassed. That they have a voice. There's so many underlying hidden things in there when kids do things. That's why they evolve so quickly over a very short time. And it's all about keeping that momentum going. It's all about learning to know what the child needs to do. Like, you know, one of these days, the child will need to tie their own shoes. And have you ever seen a child when they're tying their own shoes? You show them once, boom, and you could do it in literally 3 seconds, okay? But they do it and they can't do it. They get the loop wrong. It's not going in the right direction. And it's frustrating, right? And so most parents, what do? They said, oh, let me show you. Let me do it for you. Realize that skills like that and others are skills that a child needs to learn for the rest of their life. Why are you stepping up to the place to volunteer that work for the rest of their life? Right? It's like, let them do it. And you know what? When you are a parent or when you are a coach, when you are whoever that, what position you are in, when you let people struggle, let them persevere, that's the greatest gift you can give them. So I heard this one story of this child. They were in a child center, but many of the kids were ADHD and physically disabled and so on. And certain people got to do certain jobs in there to make everybody feel like they belong in this group. So they're making dinner, right? There was one particular child that was supposed to come over and grab the turkey or the large bird that they were going to have and eat for that day. And the cook felt that there was somebody beside them. And he says, oh, I just grabbed the turkey and put it on the plate and gave it to this child. And then it was a completely different child. It was one that had a hard time walking and they were sort of spastic. And the cook looked over and he's halfway to the table to put this turkey, hopefully put this turkey on the table. And it looked like, you know, he's going to dump it and everything. Oh my God, if he drops that, nobody eats, you know, and they get there and they're just saying, oh my God. And they just had to stop. They couldn't go over and scare the child because they knew he didn't like being touched and he would freak out. So they had to let him do it. And he's going closer and closer to the table, and you could hear a pin drop. It's just quiet. Everybody knows this kid. And then the kid puts the turkey on the table, and everybody cheered. You know, and then the phrase came after, maybe it isn't the fact that the child was able to put the turkey on the table. I guess the incredible part was we let him. We let him struggle. And boy, did he struggle because he did not want to drop that thing. And the fact that he compensated and he didn't spill a drop, the floor was completely fine, and he did it. So we let him do it. And isn't that amazing when we can let kids and we can let people struggle and it's okay? Don't make it a frustration in your energy. The fact that you can do it faster, better, stronger, whatever. Just let them. It's okay that you could let them do this. It's okay that they are struggling. If you're okay with that, That's a huge gift. You know, even in the elderly, when we look at the elderly and what they are going through, I mean, they used to do tasks and they used to have the ability to do many things, run, ride a bike and all these things. And as the years progress, they start losing their balance. They start, you know, their muscles aren't as strong as they used to be. They are going through a time where they used to do something effortlessly. And now it's a constricted effort to try to get that done and still can't go even half of where they used to be. So there's that general decline and they don't feel good that they no longer can physically do things. And then especially if they have family members that says, oh, what's going on, Dad? Or what's going on, Mom? You know, you used to remember phone numbers and now I give you a number and you forget it the moment I tell you. You used to remember all these things. And then what kind of positive affirmation and result happens from that when they hear that on top of what they're noticing, you're seeing it and you're amplifying it again. They know they're declining and they're being reminded of it every time someone mentions it, of the things they cannot do. I don't know if that's fair. I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong. I'm just saying it's happening. And it gets sometimes to the point where we call it elderly abuse when they physically, when the other party physically does something or mentally does something. Oh, you are so an idiot. You're such a stupid. And they go on and on about them not being able to do something. Or why would you go outside without your boots? Why would you go, you're just going out with your running shoes, let's say in the snow. Or why would you go outside? You're not wearing a coat. Imagine 60 years ago, they used to tell that to you. And did you listen as a child? Probably not. You still went outside at 30 below with no hat. Right? You did. I know I did. And a lot of my friends did. Thinking about it, they're just there at the bus stop and they're freezing. And I don't care, but I look cool. And that's the thing. But here's the story that I heard recently. It was about a daughter taking care of her elderly mother. And she just wanted to get the mother to do as much as she could with the level that she could. So in one particular task was going to the washroom, especially at night. So when she had to go at night, she would call her daughter and she couldn't really walk that well. It was just like little baby walks and she had to watch not to fall. And her daughter said, Mom, you could do this. You could so do this. So from her bed to the washroom, and whenever that was done, came back, amounted to about 45 minutes of encouraging and walking and being patient in that task. All in all, the mother was able to sort of toddle and walk and do her thing, always reenacting and activating those muscles it took for her to stand up for herself because she still had a walker. And she could use a walker really well. She still had a wheelchair as well in case they had to go shopping where they had to get to the place sort of quicker. They would put her in the wheelchair and then move her around. And then in some aisles, she would actually get up and do things. Okay, that kind of thing. So she did this for quite amount of time. And then there was a time where the daughter had to go on an important business trip. Could not get out of it. She had to go. It was a 2-week trip and it's about her work. And so she had to go on this trip. She asked her husband to see if he would be willing to take on the responsibility of taking care of her mom. And right away, without any hesitation, the husband said, absolutely. I'll do this for you and I'll do this for your mom. No problem. You just go ahead, have fun on your trip. Then she went off. She came back about 2 weeks later. And only to find her mom in a chair and she was really depressed, really down. And it didn't take very long before her mom said, is there any way that you could take me to the washroom? And she said, okay, but could not get up. She would not get up. I said, Mom, what's going on? I just want to do anything. And so she talks to the husband. He says, what's going on? I says, I don't know. I don't know. She just stopped wanting to do things. Well, what about her exercises? How was she doing on her exercises? She didn't want to do them, so I didn't force her. I figured it would just be easier just to leave her alone, you know, not to bother her all the time, because I know you do that. But I think just leaving her and to rest would be the best. Okay. And then, like, how did you do with the washroom trips? Oh, it was easy. When she had to go, I just lifted her up, took her to the washroom. She did her thing, came back, was back in 5 minutes, maybe 10 in some cases. Aha. So right away, the daughter saw it, got an idea that, okay, this is one of the reasons why mom is down. And after that point, she could never walk. She was bedridden, and she couldn't even use the walker anymore because it takes strength to lift up your body and stand. She couldn't do that anymore. So the whole idea was, when you focus on the task of the journey, there's a price to pay if you're only focusing on the task, because you're not persevering. You're not struggling. You're not using those muscles that really get going, just like the butterflies behind me. There's an evolution among everything. If butterfly is in a cocoon, or the caterpillar is in a cocoon, man, does it have to fight to get out of there. It's the same with eggs, our little chicks. They have to fight to get out of that egg. And nature creates the egg just strong enough to create the muscles needed for them to walk when they finally get out. The cocoon is just strong enough for them to want to fight to move and get the blood moving and get the fluids moving in their wings, so they're strong enough to fly. If it's too easy, they'll come out and they'll never be able to fly, because there's been no reason to do that. When you don't walk because you can walk, but you decide not to walk, in some days, then the muscles will think that, okay, we don't need to walk anymore. We don't need to fly. We don't need to do all these other things, because we're afraid of struggle. We're afraid of perseverance. It's that perseverance that is the actual thing that gets everything going. But when we look at it in a negative way, it's more difficult. We see it in a different light. We see it in a different way. One of the things that Spirit wants you to know, that it's the toil and the struggle that is everything. When you connect to your higher self, your higher essence of who you are, it'll always tell you to keep going. And your muscles will say, oh no, I cannot do that. And he says, yes, you can. We're going to be patient. We're going to be okay. But you got to do this, because the moment we let up on you, you won't be able to do it. At least you're able to do it, but you don't think that you can. But your muscles can, for now. We don't want the muscles to agree with what your mind is saying. If you can't do it is one thing. But even if you're bedridden, you can still use your arms. And if you stop using them, you won't even be able to raise them. So in other words, it's the perseverance that is everything. But another part of this is very similar to what happens when you're on a desert island. Eh? It's all about persevering and going through that stage. Somehow you end up on a desert island, whether it's a plane crash or whether you got lost and you end up on this land that you're looking to get rescued on. And you're all by yourself. So for the very first few days or first few weeks or however, you have hope that you're going to see a plane and they're going to land. Hey, I'm rescued. Yay, let's have a party. Okay? And then it doesn't happen. Hope very, very quickly turns to doubt. Am I ever going to get out of here? The moment you accept that, it's poison to your mind. Because hope is a short-term energy that gets you through, that something hopefully might come. It's a hope, right? But hope has to ride on something. It has to ride on something more expansive and more purpose, more something bigger than just hope. When you look at the different ways that we think, it will all lead to doubt unless we're doing it. So unless you start thinking of your family, you got to also realize that if your family is sending out a plane or sending out a search party, you got to survive the rescue. There's no point in finding your body, right? So let's do whatever we need to do to survive. And so that survival instinct comes. We all have it. It's all there because it's part of your evolution. That's thousands and tens of thousands of years old. It's in your DNA. Now, whether you want to activate that is a different story, but it's in there. And it's only going to stay there is if you activate it and say that we are really going to do this. Someone once said that if we accept doubt in any way, it will poison our thoughts enough to see that quitting is now an option. Quitting is an option. It is not the end result. It has to be something you are accepting. Very similar thing happened with the Apollo 13, if you saw that movie. He says, we got to bring these guys back with power to spare, because the whole thing went sideways from the very beginning. And they say, I don't care what happens, we got to get these guys back. Failure is not an option here. And they came back, and there was power to spare. Okay, let's get right into the meditation. This particular meditation is from the lotus flower. We created this, the Spirit and I created this a number of months ago, and it's all about perseverance. It's all about resilience. It's all about resilience, and it's all about getting something that you really want, because if you look at how the lotus flower operates, you don't find them in the most luxurious places on earth, do you? It's in swamp, one of the dirtiest, filthiest place you could be, and there's this beautiful flower there, and it's thriving in swamp, in an area where even fish can't live, in an area where frogs don't really go, because it's just so dense, and it's this swamp. And that's where there's this beautiful flower. So persistence is a great energy in that particular flower. So we're going to play that in the background as you're meditating to kind of reignite the persistence that is inside of you to get the higher purpose of really what you want out of life and not being hooked on things. I want you to get hooked on passion, get hooked on what it will mean to you and what it will mean that even if you get there, it takes longer. It doesn't matter. It's worth the toil. It's worth the struggle. And I'm not afraid of hard work. I think most of us are like that. But sometimes because we sometimes get so overcomfortable is that we'd rather sleep in a nice warm bed rather than get up at 6 a.m. to do yoga, right? Okay. So the thing is, if you know what the end result is and how it's going to help you, that is the higher purpose of whatever that task is. Then you don't mind getting up. And if you do, they're even saying, take a cold shower. That's super uncomfortable, but it's extremely healthy. It gets the body going, and it does 32 other things with you for all that cold, instant cold that you have in the morning, okay? So I want you to breathe in the color orange, okay? Breathe out the color orange. Just focus on your breathing if you can listen to what the sounds are. So if you have earphones or earbuds, that would be really good. You'll be able to hear the tuning forks, and that sound resonance is all about struggle and the fact that you can do this, the fact that nothing will keep you down. A lot of sounds are in there that you won't hear, which is okay because it is about energy, and that will help you whatever through something, right? Let's see what visions come up for you after this. So take a deep breath, and we'll see you in about 13 minutes, okay?
thank you for listening to Raising Your Spirits. If there is a subject you would like to hear in a future podcast or would like to book a session with Tony, reach out to his Facebook group at Janice Shields Natural Healing Center or group tuning classes with Tony on his online virtual weekly classes. The YouTube channel is Suzanne and Tony 17. That's Suzanne and Tony, all one word and the number 17. And the website is lovehigherself.com. Until next time, namaste.
Hey there. If you like this show, I want you to text someone right now that you think needs to hear this episode. If they are going through a tough time and they need some inspiration, let them know by sending them a link to this podcast. Let me know how it goes to see if it helped them. All the best.